Everybody is a star.
I got one for you too. I've been in love since the day I saw Fast Times. It's on permanent rewind. And can you guess my favorite part? I used to like tossing off to her pool scene. Now I'm kissing TV screens. She's the only star who's touched my heart on. All I really need is someone like Phoebe, someone to excite my fantasy. And every night I dream she will be here with me, and I'll be the only one for her. How about that?
Whoa, is that your new song?
It's inspired by a movie. Can you guess what?
Yeah, it was. Didn't you mention it? The Fast Times?
Yeah, there you
Yeah.
go.
Oh, yeah.
It's my Phoebe Cates song.
Did you,
I stole it from FenXTX.
okay. You could definitely could have written those lyrics, though. It's like straight out of your mouth.
So you know what straight out of my mouth is right.
That's what she said.
I want to see that movie so bad again. You know what the songs are going to be for this? Moving in Stereo by the Cars and this one. That's what
Oh,
the
there you go.
songs are going to be.
Cars have a lot of good songs.
Yeah, every time I hear that one, though, I think of Judge Reinhold tossing off to the pool scene.
Yeah.
Every time we hear it in the car, me and Barb look at each other.
Yeah,
It's like, doo, 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 doo.
Barb looks at you and says, "Don't you start,
Don't
Mike.
you start. Don't you
Don't you
start.
start.
We're in the car, it's
We're in
public.
public." So, how's it going out there? In
It's
the
going
Rocky
well.
Mountains.
It's going well. How about you in the Buffaloes?
It's pretty good. It's a little hu
Tatanka.
It's a little humid
Yeah.
today.
I
I'm
just
already
got back from
sweating.
walking Harley, so I'm kind of sw my he my headsets are all sweaty.
Yeah, these are different headsets I record with, but the ones that I wear just to listen to stuff, they're the over-the-ear kind that have the thing that go around the back of the head.
Yeah.
And they have the ear pads. So if I'm wearing them while I'm cleaning the house or something like that in the summer, they end up getting kind of. I gotta let them dry out afterwards. I gotta let them air dry.
That's the way these are gonna be.
Yeah.
Well, we were out late recording DC Noise last night, and man, it's another classic, man. Holy crap. Knutson was plastered.
Oh.
Oh, God.
Wow, he was supposed to be taking a break. He told me he was taking a break until I think he said September or something like
Yeah, he said,
that.
fuck it. Michelle was out on the for the weekend, so
Ah.
yeah. He said, fuck it.
He was left home alone.
Yeah, Home Alone was right. And he had some drums. He had a drum set. So he was a drunk drummer.
Oh man, he's
It was
probably
hilarious. There's like two times last night, man. It hurt so bad. Like I couldn't breathe. I was wheezing and everything. I was hurting.
yeah. I forget what it was, but I've laughed that hard at the show before. I think it was the first episode that Gil, first of the two Gil episodes. I was laughing so hard that I got into that where you're not really making any noise anymore.
Yeah,
And
it
you're
hurts.
just convulsing. Yeah, it started to hurt.
Hurts the ribs, man.
He fit right in, though, Gil did,
Yeah,
with the other three of you.
he sure did. He fits in everywhere he goes. He's just a smooth guy.
But yeah, it's a humid day here. That always makes me sweat.
Yeah. Sweaty
But I'll take
balls.
it. I'll take it.
Sweaty balls.
Gotta break out the baby powder.
Yeah. Did you ever see that episode of Friends where Ross did that? He was wearing the leather pants. That was one of the funniest episodes I think I've ever saw.
I don't think I've seen that one. I've
Well,
seen random issue or episodes, but my sister is
this
the
one's,
expert.
yeah, ask your sister about that. It's the one where he buys leather pants to kind of be like a yuppie, and they're so tight and so hot that he just sweats and he can't take them off. And Joey's on the phone with him in the bathroom, and he's like, "Put baby powder and put lotion, put all this shit on." He's trying to get his pants off just so he can breathe. Oh my God, it's so funny.
Yeah,
There's a
back.
couple. Ross wasn't like my favorite, but there's a couple of episodes where he was in that they were hysterical. The one where he goes to a tanning booth too, and they spray him wrong. It's like, turn around and wait 10 minutes. Psh. So he's like dark on half of him. It looks like shit. Oh my God.
The other day, I was at my in-laws' house and, or no, my at my brother and sister-in-law's house, and my nephew was watching something on the DVR, a Mickey Mouse show, and then when it ended, Friends was on the regular show, or was around the regular TV channel, and it was an episode that. Where Denise Richards was on
Yeah.
it, and everyone kept falling in love with her.
Uh-huh.
Like they would do the slow-mo with her shaking her hair back,
Yeah.
and
It's like the modeling things where the hair is shaking and the wind.
yeah, the wind
Yeah.
is blowing. I think she was actually Ross's cousin or something, and he made a move on her, and she was freaked out. But then the episode ended with Phoebe seeing her and having the same reaction
Having
to
the same
her.
reaction.
But yeah, my sister is the Friends expert. She used to try to get us. Someone bought her a Friends game
Yeah.
where you watch clips, and she would try to get people to play it with her. But there was really no point because none of us knew the show like she did.
Yeah,
She'd want to
yeah,
play the
yeah.
game, but she was the one that had
Who
all
do you
the.
play those games with? That's always hard.
Yeah,
Even
you need to.
if you're like a geek wanting to play the Star Wars game, nobody wants to play with you if you're an expert.
Right.
'Cause when it's game time, you're usually it's not with all your geek friends, do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, that's what the internet's for, to find people
Yeah.
that she's got to go on the internet and find other friends, fans. But, so what should we start with today?
What did we do last time? Did we do Buck first?
I think we did Buck first last time.
All right, so let's start with some comics.
Sounds good.
Why don't you kick us off? Because I think I started last time.
All right. Let me just reach over here.
So I can interrupt you. You'll say, "Oh," and I'll go, "Oh, do you remember?"
Yeah, Daryl called you Kanye.
He that wasn't all of it. He was texting me. He's like, "God damn, Mike." You didn't let him complete a sentence.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
So, I'm pretty much all DC this time.
Well, that's good because, well, I was going to say I don't have any DC, but I do. I have one DC.
Okay. Anyone listens to the show at this point, they know that there's a bit of a DC bias.
Yeah.
Little bit of a DC edge. But I read the first team up ever of Batman and Superman
Oh,
from
nice.
Superman 76. Obviously, this is the original volume one. And it's called The Mightiest Team in the World from 1952. It's got a cover by Win Mortimer. It's written by Edmond Hamilton with pencils by Kurt Swan. And it was inked by John Fischetti and Stan Kay. Stan Kay's was Kurt Swan's regular inker, I think, or he did a lot of inking of Kurt Swan and Dick Sprang. But
I didn't
so
realize it was their first appearance. That's pretty cool.
yeah, I guess it was the first time they teamed up.
It's worth a fortune. Holy crap.
Yeah, I'm not reading the original.
1100, 1952.
And then this is kind of the inspiration for making World's Finest, the team-up book between the two of them.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this. It was kind of hilarious. The two of them end up on the same cruise. It's a vacation cruise to a place called Verania. And Lois and Clark, well, it was originally that Lois is supposed to be going. And then Clark goes as well, but the ship is too packed. It's too crowded, so he has to put him in with another passenger, Mr. Bruce Wayne. So the two of them, Clark and Bruce, are both in the same room, and they're thinking, oh, nice to meet you and all that, but they're both thinking, oh, what if he finds out I'm Superman? What if he figures out that I'm Batman? And right away, before the ship can even take off, this guy takes a fires on a gas tank truck, like one of those big four-wheelers that transports big, huge thing of gasoline. So it catches fire, and he's supposedly doing this. He puts on an asbestos suit, and he wants to steal some diamonds. And Lois gets trapped in the midst of the fires that are going on. So Clark and Bruce see this from inside their cabin out the window. So they're both thinking, I got to figure out how to switch into my other identity without the other noticing. So Bruce says, mind if I switch off the light and turn in? And Clark says, no, I'm tired too. And they're thinking, we can switch in the dark. But then, so they turn off the lights and it's dark and both of them are trying to secretly switch into their costumes. But
sounds like an episode of Friends.
Yeah, really. But unfortunately, all of a sudden, the flames have gotten so bright outside that it shines a light in through their window and they see each other. He says, why you're Superman? And you, Bruce Wayne, you're Batman. And so they say, well, there's no time to talk about it now. Let's go save Lois. So they do, of course. Batman gets Lois out of there by swinging through on his rope. And while Superman does the heavy lifting, he lifts the burning truck up into the sky. And he welds the bullet holes shut. And inhales a lung full of water vapor from a cloud and comes back down carrying the truck with one hand, and he spits out all the water vapor onto the fire to put it out. So after that happens, they go onto the ship as Batman and Superman. They talk to the ship's captain and say, we believe that the crook has snuck onto the ship as a passenger, so if you don't mind, we'd like to be able to accompany you guys. And the captain says, you know, I'll be honored. You two can take my own cabin and I can share with someone else, with the first mate. And so the two of them see Lois, and at this point, you know, Lois knows Superman. And it's that period of time where Lois is always trying to figure out Superman's secret identity. And so it leaves them with the situation that Lois knows that Clark and Bruce Wayne are on the ship. She also knows that Batman and Superman are on the ship. So they got to figure out, how are we going to appear as Batman and Superman and get and look for this crook? So Lois comes to their cabin and Clark pretends to be seasick. And Clark Kent, you would be seasick. Well, I don't care. Not with Superman and Batman aboard. But they say, well, Lois will be tagging everywhere after Batman and Superman. How can we root out the criminal on board without her getting in our hair? So Superman suggests to Batman, you should pay attention to her, make her think you're falling for her, and I'll pretend to be jealous. She'll be too occupied for amateur detective work. So they're gonna try to distract her with romance. But she's listening secretly from around the corner, and she said, oh, that's his plan. Well, I'll teach Superman a lesson. So she goes over to Batman and says, oh, I so want to talk to you, Batman. Superman, why don't you go rough out, or why don't you go smooth out the rough waves that's making the ship shake around? So Superman goes out and lifts the ship up out of the water and carries it for a while so that it's not rocked around by the water. And so they conduct their investigation, trying to avoid Lois. And Lois is, because she heard Superman's plan, she's really pouring it on thick, really acting like she's totally in love with Superman. And she suggests that Superman, or she suggests that Batman, during the ship's dance that night, does some of his famous stunts to entertain the crowd. She's trying to make Superman jealous. So that night at the ship dance, Batman's doing a bunch of acrobatic flips and everything like that, and Superman's standing there. He says, oh, he's really terrific. Lois says, oh, isn't he? And so glamorous too. And so Superman says, guess I'll do a few stunts for the audience too, Lois. Be back in just a moment.
It sounds like a Batman 66 TV episode.
Yeah, does
Like
it?
a dance off or something.
Yeah. So she says, ho hum, you can if you like. And Superman, Superman comes back with three huge icebergs and juggles them for the crowd. And Lois, not impressed, she said, he's so corny. I guess I'll polish my nails. So later on after that, they're like, well, I guess our plan's working. And they're further investigating this Mr. Smilter guy that's on the ship, and they're correct that he was the one behind the problems at the beginning of the issue. And Lois is still trying to investigate and figure out what's going on and get the story, and she comes across this Mr. Smilter just as he's about to be picked up by a helicopter to get him off of the ship. And so he's got a gun and he tells Lois Lane that she's coming with him and kidnaps her. And so Batman and Superman get there just in time to see the helicopter take off. So Superman actually throws Batman, like picks him up and throws him into the air so that at the helicopter, and Batman grabs onto the helicopter and gets inside and knocks the heads of the pilot and Mr. Smelter's heads together. So, and they're able to find the gems, which is this kind of neat because Superman, his X-ray vision can't see through lead. And the gun was made that he had was made out of lead, and he had hid the diamonds inside of his gun so Superman couldn't see that they were in there. So things seem to be wrapped up, and Batman and Superman tell Lois that they're leaving the cruise because they're all said and done. But what they're really thinking is they got to go back into their cabin and switch back to being Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne. Well, this makes Lois mighty suspicious. She's not a dummy. And she says, Clark Kent, you got over your seasickness mighty quick. Coincidentally, or as soon as Superman and Batman left, you and Bruce appear again. She walks away, and they think, "Oh man, now we did it." She's sure we're Superman and Batman. And Superman says, "Well, I got a way to cover your secret identity, Bruce, but I don't think anything's going to help mine." So Superman actually carries Batman, flies him back at super speed to Gotham, makes sure that Batman's spotted by reporters on a rooftop, and pretty quick pretty quick turnaround here. The next morning, Lois is looking at the printout of the ship's radio news that Batman had appeared in Gotham. So that convinces her that Bruce Wayne is not Batman, but they're still trying to figure out how do we fix this with Superman. So Superman flies out and greets them at the docks, and Bruce Wayne disguises himself as Clark Kent and leaves the ship with Lois as Clark Kent. And so they pretend that that's him. And at the last two panels, the two of them, they go behind some crates on the dock, and Superman gives Bruce Wayne his Batman costume. He puts on his mask and takes off the glasses he was using to pretend to be Clark. And then they said, Batman says, let's see which of us she'll go out to dinner with. That'll prove her preference. But when they return to the crowd, oh no, both of them say together. And there's Robin, Dick Grayson. Hi, Batman. What do you think? I'm taking Miss Lane out to dinner. And he's got Lois's arm around his, and she says, isn't he the cutest little chap? So I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Was it 52 pages, or was it just
It was.
because the cover says 52 pages? I'm wondering if it had
Oh
like other
no.
stories in it.
Yeah, there was other stories in it. I don't know what, I could look it up, but the story itself was only 12 pages, that
Oh
story.
wow.
Yeah. So I'll look up on Mike's Amazing World probably to show what else was in there, but
I went to go to see if I could buy it, and it's pretty high.
yeah, I'm not surprised, but there's your real Superman versus Batman right there.
Yeah.
But I find it very I find these stories, these Silver Age and early and late Golden Age stories, really entertaining because
Yeah.
they're
This is totally golden. It's 50s.
yeah, but it definitely by this point, you know, there's a much more of a Silver Age sensibility and look to the art, in my opinion, as you get into the 50s.
Yeah, I.
Even though Silver Age officially started later. Actually, well, it's Superman comics, so that meant, as opposed to Action Comics, they were all Superman stories. But there's a there's two more Superman stories in the issue. Bill Finger, Wayne Boring story called The Misfit Manhunter. And then there's a Mrs. story called Mrs. Superman by William Woolfolk Folk and Al Plastino. So you can get the full issue reprinted. There was a Millennium edition of the issue, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in 2000. All those Millennium editions that they did. There was one of this issue, I guess, because of the team up. But I read it before they go into the issues of World's Finest. It's in the Showcase Presents World's Finest Volume 1, and they included this because it's the first team up, and then it goes on to, I think, World's Finest 71, which is the first. It's like about a year after this Superman story. Yeah, 1954. So 2 years later, actually. That was the first World's Finest comics where for years and years till they were Batman Superman team ups.
Cool. Well, since we're in the DC mode, I'll cover my one DC book. And I'm going to mention these two names and see if you can guess what it is. Pat McGreal and Anthony Castrillo. Two awesome creators.
I cannot. He stumped me.
I can't either. I
All
never heard of these guys before. But
right, that's good.
they did a two part. Well, they might have done more issues, but they did a two part story in Hawkman, from 1996, issue number 20, issue number 29. And
I should have screwed with you because
I posted this
you
cover.
posted it, but I forgot you posted it. I should have been like, "That's Hawkman. I am Mr. DC Expert Man."
That's Hawkman number 29 with the cover of Hawkman on the.
Yeah.
It's called Voices of Dissent, part one of two. It says it on the cover. I didn't read part
Right.
two, but I did this in honor of Brian Reigate from Comics and History because he's done like a lot of awesome specials of Hawkman. And he talked vaguely about this incarnation. So I thought I would read it because I missed these issues, and they were in my to read box. So I had missed like 29 through the end, and I was pleasantly surprised to read this from an historical perspective,
That's cool.
because I always thought, and my memory doesn't serve me on this run at all. Like I know like the Shadow War of Hawkman and some of his Silver Age appearances, but I didn't remember shit from this incarnation. Well, and I never read this issue. But what I was shocked to see is the legacies in here of Hawkman, and it kind of talks like to the Geoff Johns run. Like it opens up with Caveman Hawkman, and it moves past that, and it's a story of two brothers, and they fight, and one guy kills the other, and I think it has to do with the climax of the story, but I'm not 100% sure. It's like the death of Hawkman in the past, as they were like tribal warriors, and somebody kills him, and then later on he's hearing voices in his head. This is the Avatar time, and he's just like going nuts, like he's like flying, and Shayera is in the plane with one of their friends, and she's like, "Hawkman, let me help you," and he's like, "No, Shayera, you've done enough. You brought me back from this complex," and he's like, "You helped me off the effects of Scarecrow's attack, because I guess Scarecrow attacked him." And this is edited by Paul Cooperberg, and I've actually bought a lot of books from him on eBay. But he was the editor at the time. He's actually like freaking out, like he's in a drug induced state and losing his mind. And he doesn't want help from anybody. But it actually cuts to a scene in the Wild West where another incarnation of Hawkman is there, and this guy we have seen in Geoff Johns' run for sure. I remember seeing this incarnation in the Hawkman Legacies, which was amazing. I didn't think I'd see this Western Hawkman. And then the scene cuts to this like healer. She's a homeless person in one of the cities, and like this girl is like possessed by the devil. Like she needs to be exorcised. And she seems to have like mutant abilities because she actually exorcises the demon out of this daughter's. The mom gives it to this woman and gives her change, and she's like, "No, thank you." She didn't want any money, but she's able to exorcise it. And one of the guys here sees that happen, and that comes into play later on. Hawkman runs into one of his friends at the time, and he's losing his mind, and he actually pours him some tea. And he drugs him. And this particular guy, his friend, has three arms. So I'm thinking he's Thanagarian, you know, like one of the guys from Thanagar. Because there's like a lot of mutated, or maybe he's just a mutant. But he spikes his tea to try to calm him down because he's totally freaking him out. And he actually gets his senses back. And he's like, "You drugged me? What are you doing?" He gets kind of pissed off about it, but he drugs him for a reason so he can take him to the homeless woman to try to exorcise the demon out of him. And she tries to, and they go like flying through the sky as she's holding on to him, and she tries to exorcise the demon, and it kind of ends where he gets a sensibility and leaves her in the middle of nowhere But her other ability is like to transport into the body of somebody else for transportation. So she like is able to vanish there into Hawkman and return home, I guess. It's very weird. But he gets his sensibilities and goes after the one guy that he knows is the villain, and it's Vandal Savage. And the way I read this story is I thought the caveman that killed the first Hawkman, he looked like Vandal Savage. So like I'm like wondering if that link was there and they just didn't flat out tell us, you know? So it's really a cool comic, and I'll probably read number two for next time because kind of left on a cliffhanger. And the other thing that was interesting at the time is I read all the letters page just to see what people thought of Hawkman at this time, because he's not this is one of the incarnations that that a lot of people don't talk about, you know, the Avatar period, where he actually has that like blade that he pulls off his back. It's like this Wolverine blade that he holds. He doesn't like hold like the mace or anything. He's got this blade and he has it on his back and he'll like pull it out. It's like a Wolverine blade. And his wings are like totally organic. Like he doesn't like strap them on. A matter of fact, his friend says, "Can you shrink your wings now?" And he goes into the house and his wings just shrink down to nothing, so he looks human. But what I was surprised is to see like the legacies, like the caveman Hawkman and then the Western Hawkman, and they were both killed. You know how they, and Geoff Johns is, it was more of a love story, but it had the legacies where they'd have all the Hawkmen, and then in each incarnation they'd both die and then get reincarnated. And this kind of had this going on, and I really dug it. It was weird. And he actually has like hawk eyes in these, like bird eyes. You know how the hawks have their eyes. And long, long hair, because it was the 90s, like a mullet. But it was a pretty cool story. I dug it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what that blade is called. It's a 'cause it's a triangle shaped blade with a full like a full handhold that you'd hold with your fist. And I've seen them before as accessories for maybe G.I. Joe's
Oh, really?
or
So
something
it's like
like
a
that,
little blade.
or either that or it might have been Ninja Turtles. I think it's a martial arts weapon, but maybe a listener can that's more familiar with martial arts weaponry and stuff like that. But I think I've seen those before, as I think it's a real blade. Yeah, this is an interesting run. I'm looking at it. 33 issues it went, and I guess I was aware of the post that there was a post 0 hour Hawkman, like you said. Brian talked about it, but yeah, you're right that people don't talk about it because I think this is the one I'm least aware
Familiar
of.
with, yeah.
Yeah, but
Well, I
interesting.
know early on in the series, well, they kind of even mention in this one, they talk about the avatars, you know, like the Hawk avatar. But this one like kind of like mixed the avatars with the legacies. It was very weird. But like this I've never seen before where they had like that Western Hawkman that I've seen in other comics. And they had this caveman Hawkman, which looks like Vandal Savage killed him in the past, and now he's fighting him at the end. I really thought that was really cool. And I've never heard
That's
of
interesting.
this team, but all the letters in the back, I expected to be like, God, I wish we'd have the old Hawkman back or something like that. And they were all positive, man. They were all digging this
Interesting.
Hawkman. Yeah. At least the people that took the time to write in.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Pat McGrail did a lot of stuff. But if my database is correct, he did some, like Fighting American, some Justice League Quarterly stories, Chiaroscuro for Vertigo. So it looks like he's mostly active around the late 90s.
Yeah. Which means I'll have to pick them all of them up because I'm still working on my all DC comics in 76, so.
Oh, you know what? It looks like he did that. Remember there was an original Flashpoint story
Yeah.
around 2000.
Oh,
Looks
I
like he
have
was the writer
that.
of that,
Yeah, the
and
very first one. That was a good one.
Norm
That
Brayfogle,
was the
Inc.
first one.
artist.
Matter of fact, I didn't know that existed until Flashpoint was coming out. And you know how I often monitor the speculation market?
Yeah.
Everybody was speculating that, oh, this is going to be hot because Flashpoint's coming. So I got it for like cover price or whatever.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he did a couple issues of The Flash. But the issue one of Hawk of this Hawkman series had a gold foil cover.
Yeah. I would,
It's
man,
pretty.
if I just had the time, I would love to revisit it, like the whole run, you know? But now I'm like into the, I don't know what got me into the Image, like the 90s Image too. Well, all of these are 90s books, so
Yeah.
I don't know.
It looks like the artist, Anthony Castrillo, looks like he might have done some Valiant stuff. Secret Weapons number 17, Bloodshot 26, Time
Yeah.
Walker 6, 7, 8, 15. So,
So it's got a Valiant
oh, it looks like he
connection.
did a couple issues of The Flash too. But
I
it's
could
just
tell you,
like,
his art style is pretty cool. It actually reminded me. Let me look at some of these panels again. Man, who did it remind me of?
he did some X-Force.
It kind of looks like Paris Collins, kind of. Mixed with somebody else, and I can't get the reason I say Paris Collins is because you know how he drew the eyes? They're kind of big.
Yeah.
He has some scenes in here that they're kind of like that.
Okay. Yeah, with both these guys, they did more than just this Hawkman stuff, but it doesn't look like either of them was on any specific book for a long period of time. And people they don't tend to stick in my brain if I can't associate them with something that was on they were on for a while.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I have another Superman related thing, but I think I'll switch it up in between. And I went back to those Wonder Woman issues that I was reading that I was talking about, and because last we left Diana, she was stuck in a realm of the that God that has the really hard, I think he's Mayan, that has the real hard long name to say.
Named Quasiquil or something like it's like got like 25 letters.
Tezcatlipoca,
Yeah.
Tezcatlipoca. But and she's with the guy Frank, that was a pilot, and they both got trapped on that island. At first, they thought it was just Diana thought it was just Circe that she was dealing with, but she had allied herself with this Aztec. That's what he was, an Aztec god. And the Aztec god had changed her from Wonder Woman into Diana Prince, and then she was joined by this Keith Griggs, this pilot, that they got carried through this smoky mirror into this realm that they think might be controlled or created by this the Aztec god. And the issue prior to this had, so this is issue 315, I don't think I said, so the issue prior to this ended with a bunch of Amazonian warriors approaching. And this story is called The Face in the Mirror, and it's the same team, Dan Mishkin and Don Heck, doing pencils and inks. So they're surrounded. Keith and Diana are surrounded by the Amazonian warriors, and Keith says, Now, I've always enjoyed surrounding myself with beautiful women, but this is ridiculous. But Diana's concerned because she assumes that the Amazonian warriors aren't in control of themselves, that the Aztec god must be doing something himself. But the Aztec god disappears, and Keith feels kind of responsible because, as far as he's concerned, he had been missing, and that's why Diana had gone to the island to try to find him. He doesn't know she's Wonder Woman, so he feels responsible for the fact that she's in this mess as well. So he makes a move to get them out of captivity. He makes a strike against one of the spears that the warriors are holding, and Diana finds out that her transformation out of her Wonder Woman identity by the Aztec god has also taken away her powers. And she goes and she hits one of, she's successful, you know, she has combat training and stuff, so she's successful in her, knocking away a spear from one of the women, but she hurts her hand in a way that she doesn't expect to. But she's still able to kind of hold her own. Her and Keith fight off the Amazons. It actually kind of references back to that jumpsuit period because she thinks to herself, I just hope I haven't forgotten my martial arts training. But Keith is actually impressed. He notices Diana's fighting ability, and Diana's also trying to be careful not to actually hurt any of the Amazons because she doesn't think that they're there of their own will. So the pair, they're able to get free just as they see some actual Aztec warriors running towards them as reinforcements. So they try to escape. There's this doorway that leads into a building. All this so far had been taking place outside, and though they kind of get trapped, it also gets them a moment where they're not pursued because some kind of automatic mechanism that they trip closes the door behind them. And there's a little bit of like a romantic moment because Keith says, "You know, Di, watching you in action and looking at you now and here, yes, Keith, it's like I'm seeing you for the very first time." But it's kind of cool because later on, just to skip ahead, Diana makes a remark that she's used to Steve Trevor always acting like he has to protect her, whereas Keith treats her a little bit more like an equal and suggests that they split up at a later moment in the story. So it's kind of an interesting contrast where she kind of seems to have some interest in Keith herself because of the way that he's treating her as an equal. But anyways, there's a lot of subplots going on at this time. They're definitely, which I like the style of writing where there's a B and a C plot. And we've had this stuff, speaking of Steve Trevor, he's actually in Wonder Woman's invisible jet with this little alien that had accompanied him from a previous story. And they're trying
Are
to
those, is
lock.
it still those gremlins, those green
Yeah,
things?
it's a little gremlin guy. He's like the one good one that he's still hanging out with, Steve Trevor. And they're trying to figure out what happened to Wonder Woman. And while they're flying, they get a message from that a woman trying to contact Wonder Woman that I forget her name, but that woman that's been investigating Wonder Woman's past, and that's what she's calling to say, basically, I found out secrets about you and your past that your mother wanted to hide from you, secrets about your past and about the death of Steve Trevor. She's like, "What?" But that's pretty much all for them. And the third plot that's kind of connected to that is with Etta Candy back at the Pentagon. She was expecting Steve to take her out on a date, but she's like, "Well, I guess you stood me up again." But she's feeling like she's being watched by someone, and the art makes it pretty clear that even though she's thinking that maybe that she's overreacting, that there is actually somebody watching her. So back to the main plot, Diana and Keith are trying to find their way through this temple that they've put themselves into, and they find this sort of weird room with all this treasure, and there's a little doll of the Aztec god where he's joined onto this other warrior, and Diana goes up and touches it and gets zapped and knocked backwards, but she's okay. So some of the Aztec warriors catch up with them, and this is kind of the moment where she really impresses Keith, that she does this flying jump kick and at one of the Aztec warriors' head and knocks him out immediately. And Keith is able to take out the other guys, so they get outside and they're inside a temple again, and they discover this other temple with mirrors all over it that tilt towards the sun, and talk about how the sun was important to the Aztecs, and that might be where they find the Aztec god. And Diana's thinking, well, hopefully I'll be able to get my Wonder Woman powers back if we track him down. And it's kind of this is the moment where she says she's used to Steve Trevor always acting super protective of her. And she says she likes the way that she's being treated a lot more here. And he says, obviously, the colonel has never seen you nearly take the head off an Aztec with a roundhouse kick. If he had, he wouldn't worry about you. I'll meet you inside, darling.
That's what's always weird, is she'd always protect like Steve and stuff, and he would still try to treat her like, at least in the Golden Age and the Silver Age, like a woman was treated back then, like not with respect or as an equal. It was weird.
So it's kind of interesting how they're pulling that in here, and so Di and Keith split up, both try to find ways into the temple, and she can't. There's some doors that if she had her powers, she'd be able to break open, but she still has her. So she can't do that, but she still has her golden lasso and is able to hook it onto a protrusion higher up on the temple. And she thinks to herself how it's definitely harder to climb up the rope than if she had her powers, but she also thinks, heck, if she doesn't hear Keith complain about the fact that he's not Superman, so who is she to complain? And she gets in, she does end up finding the Aztec god, and it's in this interesting room where there's all these different mirrors, and the cover takes inspiration from this moment. The mirrors supposedly, according to the Aztec god, reveal these truths of her. She sees herself as Wonder Woman, then she sees herself as a man. She's saying, are you implying that I might wish to be a male? Impossible. But it's interesting. It's an interesting drawing. It's kind of the same costume, with the star briefs, but his top kind of goes up and covers over his shoulders, so it's sleeveless, and he's got short black hair, and still has a tiara. And then she sees a picture of herself as like a little Wonder Girl, shivering in fear and stuff like that. But Keith arrives and proves to be a distraction, and he gets sent through one of the mirrors and disappears. But this whole exercise that the Aztec god is doing kind of backfires a little bit, because he's pretty mad, as in insane, and he's raving. And while he's doing that, Diana pays attention to the mirrors that are around her, and the one that's just her as Wonder Woman, she's able to reach out and touch it, and the image fades, and she comes back out of the mirror as Wonder Woman again. Look at me, deceiver. See how your schemes and clever words have failed you, and prepare to battle Wonder Woman. So it's pretty neat. I did read the
This
Huntress
is a
backup.
This is an unusual cover. My God, I just looked it up
Yeah.
now. Holy crap, they're ugly.
Yeah, it's Diana in the foreground with her back to the cover, facing a whole bunch of different funhouse mirrors. And they're all super duper distorted versions of her face.
Yeah, it looks like some stuff out of like Mad Magazine or something.
Yeah. But the Huntress backup, I think I kind of have to go back. I didn't recall as well what happened last time. In its story, it's still by Joey Cavalieri. The penciler is Mark Beecham, and the inker is Gary Martin. It's called Chasing Rainbows. I don't.
That's a song. Don't go chasing.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, I think there is a song Chasing Rainbows, but
Don't
I
go
think
chasing.
what you started singing was Chasing Waterfalls.
That's what I was thinking
Yeah,
because
by
Barbara watches that movie, We Are the Millers. Like, that's her Star Wars. Like, she
Oh
watches
yeah.
that. I think she's seen it like 35 times, and that's a big song in that movie. Waterfalls.
Don't go chasing waterfalls. Please stick to the rivers and the streams that you're used to.
There you go. Did you know all the
So
lyrics to
yeah, in the
it?
Huntress story, she's no.
Okay. Just the main
I
chorus.
might know the rest of the chorus. I don't know. Back in the day, that song
It's
was on
kind
a
of like a
lot.
rap thing going on, or it's like fast singing.
Yeah, well, it's like an R&B song.
Yeah.
There's some little influence there, maybe. But yeah, the stuff with Huntress, I was a little unclear on some of it because I didn't recall the last story. But she's dealing with a villain called Sea Lion. That has a hook hand, and she's trying to track down who's stealing information from this Project Starfish experiment. And the first guy that she's following, that she thinks might be responsible, is just has a stack of rare Motown records. And then she's at this Gotham Art Gallery where there's this artist that. It's definitely modern art. When she goes into this back room, she finds this prism that seems to, they're actually somehow related to the formula, and this guy that's supposed to be the painter, Peek, he's actually the sea lion in disguise or something like that. And he knocks her out, and at the end of the story, they're in this sub off of Gotham Harbor. And apparently, this starfish formula unlocks the DNA helix in human tissue in a way that causes the organic material to revert to a more primitive form. And so he actually injects the other guy that's with them, that's captive, that was at the gallery, and it turns him into kind of a clay face looking guy. Looks like the next issue is the conclusion of the story, but I think that started last time and. Yeah, it started last time, so it was a little unclear on it, but I think it was pretty much. Yeah, she was hired to track down this Project Starfish and who was stealing information from it. And that's where she met the painter that she was invited to the gallery opening for. So yeah, I guess that's basically what it was.
All right.
It's a cool period of Wonder Woman. It's pretty close to the end, you know. 329
Yeah.
was the last issue, but
Yeah. I think I'd be really interested in revisiting the Huntress because I'm starting to really dig that character a lot. Even in Earth 2, it's currently there. So, I just won a full run of Cyber Force Volume 2. I had bought the original 4-issue when Image was hot, you know, like they released, I think coming out of the gate, Youngblood, Spawn, A Savage Dragon, Cyber Force 4 Issues by Silva Strini, and the Shadowhawk. I think those were like the top books being, maybe Wetworks being released, because Portacio was, you know, one of the initial guys, at least initially.
Portacio, or Wetworks, I think came out a little late, but yeah, those sound, because I was there. I stopped collecting comics not long after Image launched, but I was definitely like way into the Image launch, and those sound like most of them.
Yeah, I think those are like the main books, and then Cyber 4, I had read the 4 issue, and I never continued with Volume 2. Volume 1 was just 4 issues, kind of like Savage Dragon. I believe the original Savage Dragon was like 3 issues, and then it started the ongoing. Well, the same sort of thing happened with Cyber Force. And Cyber Force was written by Mark Silvestrini and Eric Silvestrini. I wonder if they're related. He also did the pencils with inks by Scott Williams.
I think it's Silvestri.
Silvestri.
Yeah.
David Wohl was the editor. He has a lot to do with Witchblade, so you could kind of see the Top Cow universe being formed here with Cyber Force. And this was an interesting book for me, because I'm not too familiar with these characters like I am with Youngblood and Spawn and Savage Dragon. They're kind of like an area I haven't really explored. Mm-hmm. But this has – I was aware of Ripclaw, because I think issue 8 of this I did buy back in the day, because it had a McFarlane cover of Ripclaw. I think they had this like crossover where like Eric Larson would do Spawn and Silvestri would do, you know, something else, and McFarlane did Cyber Force. So they had like covers that went over. So I did own 8, so now I own 2 of those, but other than that I didn't own many of these. And this featured Ripclaw, and Ripclaw is kind of like the Native American Wolverine. And they're all enhanced by this cyber technology, and they had like chips in their head and stuff to be like made into weapons, and they ended up escaping. And Ripclaw's having nightmares about getting killed. His name is Robert Bearclaw. And in his dream, you see somebody like tearing him apart, and it looks like it's God, what is his name? He's the other guy from Wildcats that I can't remember his name, but I will find out here. He had that green hair coming out of his head. A Warblade. Uh-huh. Warblade. So he's getting killed by Warblade in his dream, and he's screaming, and then the scene cuts to Velocity. Velocity is like their speedster. Nowhere near as fast as like the Flash or Quicksilver, but she can run, you know, 70, 80, 90 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. And she's in an exercise fighting off these mechanical machines, kind of like they're training her to be part of Cyber Force, but they're hesitant to make her a member until she's trained, because she's so young. Mm. And then Ripclaw's there comes in, and he actually stops the exercise, rips up one of the armored trainers, and he actually puts her on a mission. He says, "Try to get to the finish line before I tear you apart and make you deer meat." So he's kind of like a Wolverine Kitty Pryde relationship going on here, because he doesn't want her part of the team because she thinks she's too young and untrained. So he's trying to, like, he says, "This is dangerous. You know, if you die here, you die." So he's like putting her in this lethal thing and scaring the hell out of Velocity. And at the headquarters, you know, there's Cyblade, who I don't know much about, but she's watching on a monitor. And they're saying, "Oh no, you know, like Ripclaw's stopped the exercise and is going after her." And one of the members, I don't even remember his name, but he goes after her. After Ripclaw to stop him from ripping Velocity a new one, And he says, you know, we save lives and she wants to be part of the team. And he's like, leave me alone. And he takes off. And then the scene cuts to a bar where you have a character called Ballistic. And I remember the Ballistic because I think I owned her series back in the day. But she's with Stryker, and they have like these cybernetic arms and stuff like that. And Stryker has like another arm. Actually, he's got like three cybernetic arms and one normal arm. It's very weird because like his right side is cybernetic and his other side is like human. And she's got one side that's cybernetic. And it seems like she wants to drink there. It's funny because she like beats the shit out of one guy picking up on her. He's like, "Hey, baby, how you doing? You know, you're looking hot." And she like just slams his head into the solid oak. And he goes, "Man, that's one hell of a woman. I gotta come back later with some flowers." She's like, "Everything I've ever wanted." But then they have this conversation. He's trying to bring her back to headquarters, and she's upset because she doesn't know her history. Like they vaguely remember where they came from and what was going on because of the chips and them being programmed. And she wants to go find out what her history is, and he wants to bring her back to the Cyberforce complex. And then at the Cyberforce complex, they're healing up Velocity in one of those tubes that looks like where they healed up Luke Skywalker on Hoth. And it's weird because you have this one scientist, and I don't remember if they mention his name, but he's like an older guy. He looks like Wintergreen from like Deathstroke. And they have this like little boy named Timmy, and he's helping there. And that was kind of weird. They're like the people that are helping, like the scientists on there. But there's this bar fight still between Stryker and Ballistic. And Ballistic ends up getting the best of him by kicking him in the balls and leaving. Because he says, you don't have cybernetics there. Boom! Kicks him in the balls. And then the scene cuts to Ripclaw, who they're trying to go after again because he's losing his mind. And he gets attacked by two images of Warblade and another character called Misery. And I don't recall who Misery is, but he was dreaming again, and he wakes up in that dream. So he's just having these bad dreams of getting mutilated by Warblade, and which is interesting because that's also this is the that's the Jim Lee side of the house, the Wildcats. I think Warblade was Wildcats, so that's kind of interesting. And then the members of Cyberforce say they have to go after Ripclaw and bring him back. So they say Ripclaw's in trouble. I guess they have he's back at the facility and he was having a nightmare. They said we gotta get him help. He's taken off again. So that's how it ends. But it was a pretty good issue. It was very 90s action, a lot of action. And not a lot of substance, you know, like, but it was really good at what it did. The art was really nice. And, you see, like, similarities between the popular characters at Marvel and what these characters are trying to, yeah.
Yeah, that I found was true of a lot of the early Image stuff. You could say that with Wildcats and Cyberforce. There's definitely some similarities, and with Youngblood, you could kind of find analogs to the
I
characters that
like
they were working on.
Bloodstrike and Calbot or whatever his name, Calbot, were like Cable and Deadpool.
But yeah, that was an interesting time.
And it
But I
looks
think
like
there
they were
was.
getting ready to kick off. Well, no, that was in the ads in the other book, but they were getting ready to kick off on Stormwatch. They're getting ready to kick off Gen 13, which that's probably my next project in the Image world.
Oh, yeah.
to finish volume one. I remember that book was hot. It was launched with like 13 covers, and it
Yeah.
was a popular teen angst superhero team. And I followed their adventures even in DC. I think I have all their Wildstorm stuff, but I don't have the Image stuff. I had sporadically tried them, and what I have tried, I enjoyed because they were like always on the run, a bunch of teenagers always on the run from that facility. But yeah, it was a fun read.
Cool. Yeah, I remember Gen 13. I read a handful of those back in the day. So there was some. That was kind of almost like a later phase of. They came along later.
Much later, yeah.
Yeah.
I think like the first volume was launched still with the Image banner, and it wasn't long after their launch. I think a couple years later that DC acquired the whole and the merger with Jim Lee Studios.
Right.
So.
Yeah. All right, my last one was, or is, Action Comics 241 from 1958. This is the
241.
241.
Okay.
This actually kind of, I guess, is considered by some people to be the beginning of the Silver Age Superman, because it marks the appearance of the, this is the first appearance of the Fortress of Solitude.
Oh, nice.
It's called The Super Key to Fort Superman,
I
written by
always liked
Jerry
that
Coleman.
design where they had that huge key sticking out of the.
Yeah, and that's on the
And
cover.
only he could turn it, you know, only he had the power to turn it.
Right. Yeah, it's a fun idea to
Yeah.
how we would keep other people out. It's drawn by Wayne Boring with inks by Stan Kay. And it starts off with Clark Kent, Jimmy Olsen, and Lois Lane out on streets of Metropolis. They're out on their lunch break, and Lois admires an expensive necklace, and in the next panel, Jimmy admires a custom sports car, things that they dream of having but don't ever imagine actually having. But Clark is thinking to himself, "Don't be so sure, my friends," because he's got his own plans. So later on that day, he goes out as Superman and heads down to the bottom of the sea and gets some. He's looking for some oysters because apparently he's working on a pearl necklace for Lois. And then, so he heads up to the Arctic and he grabs his key off of the cliff where he keeps it and fits it into the lock. And we're introduced to the Fortress of Solitude. And it's kind of funny. In hindsight, it looks almost a little strange and creepy. But I know at the time they just wanted to entertain kids and show them, like, look at this cool place that Superman's got, just like last time when I talked about Jimmy Olsen having a Superman room and it almost being bordering on sort of creepy looking at it from today's perspective. Well, it turns out that Superman has his own Jimmy Olsen room, so it's equally reciprocated, and that's where
That
he's
that's even more creepy though,
I
because
know.
that is like the adult.
Right, exactly.
Why would he have a Jimmy Olsen room?
Yeah, he's got a Jimmy Olsen room, and that's where he's working on a handmade sports car for Jimmy. He's got a new. He brought a new piece of steel with him that he's bending in shape to make a bumper for the car. He's doing a pretty damn good job, though.
Does he allow Jimmy in the Jimmy room?
No, he's got a statue of Jimmy Olsen, though,
Oh, that's
standing
bizarre.
there with his hands in his pocket, and then he's got a Lois Lane room where there's a statue of Lois, and there's a big, huge poster. Like judging from his, it's got to be like a 10-foot tall poster of Superman carrying Lois Lane, and it's signed to Superman with Love, Lois. But then he's such good buddies with Batman. He's got a Batman room, and he's got a statue of Batman in there, and he's building a robot detective to help out Batman if something ever happens to him. Batman's the one person that knows all his secrets, so he's got that. And then he even has a Clark Kent room that he shows us. And he says, Clark is known to be a friend of Superman, and if some unexpected earthquake ever opened my secret cave to a stranger, that wax Clark would help preserve the secret of my identity. I don't know how that would work, Superman. Like, it's just a wax statue. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm missing something, but. So he's like, now to enjoy some painting. And he's got this enormous canvas. It's so big he has to fly while he's painting it, and he's got this gigantic paintbrush that he's painting a Martian landscape that he has observed using his telescopic vision. And he does some experiments in his Fortress of Solitude. He has a suit of lead armor that he puts on to study kryptonite and see if he can overcome its dangerous effect on him. And he keeps it in a lead container. And then he's done for the night, so he goes and puts his key back up on the mountain cliff, top of the mountain. And the next day, he goes to see this famous scientist that has called for him. And the scientist says, "Here, I think I've created a metal that you can't even break. But try it out in an isolated place," because he's afraid that the reverberations of Superman trying to break it will shatter nearby buildings. So Superman thinks, "Oh, good, it'll give me another excuse to go visit my hideout." But when he gets back to his fortress, he sees written on the wall inside, "Prepare for the greatest puzzle of your career, Superman. I can enter and leave at will. Who am I? How can I do it? I dare you to find out." So Superman's like, "What the heck? Who the heck could ever have get in here? That key, no one could lift that key or move the door, and it's 50 feet of solid rock to get in otherwise." So he's like, "Well, I'm gonna check out my trophies and souvenirs and see if I can find any clues." And he goes, he looks at like a box of trophies taken while solving Luther's Jack in the Box crimes. And he goes, looks at bubbling colored crystals from Planet X. And then he has a room where he's got all these strange creatures. He has an interplanetary zoo in there. And he thinks, could one of these pets have been concealing superhuman powers and intelligence? And then he's walking around. He goes to where this room is, Forbidden Weapons of Crimedom. And he wonders, maybe this strange apparatus made by Luther, that was supposed to summon beings from the fourth dimension, maybe it got started up somehow and a creature escaped from it. It's like, well, I got a lot of theories, but I don't really know what's going on. I guess in the meantime, I'll go ahead and test out this metal that I'm supposedly not be able to break. And he's right by the Bad Penny, good for one crime, the Joker, trophy of joint Superman Batman attack on crime. Well, the professor's metal is not so good. He shatters it right away. he punches right through it and actually has to patch up the wall because he punches right through the metal into the wall. Wow.
That sounded like actual paper you were turning.
This is my secret Golden Age collection. I don't want anybody to know about it because I have so much value. No,
It's a showcase? Okay.
Yeah, showcase.
I was going to say, wow, you got some expensive books, man.
I'm getting jealous for a second there.
I am. I was getting envy there.
Yeah. No, I don't have the first appearance of the Fortress of Solitude in my collection, unfortunately. But, he makes some diary entries. He writes his diary on these gigantic sheets of metal that he carves with his fingernails. And he writes in Kryptonese. And so then he leaves again, but this time when he leaves, he melts the door with his X-ray vision, fuses it to the rock to make it even harder to get in there. And so the next day, after doing some Superman duties, putting out some fires and stuff, he said, all right, I'm going to go back to my retreat because I got to figure out what's going on. But this time, since he fused the door, he just goes flying through the 50 feet of solid rock and then seals it back up again after himself. So he goes back and he sees that painting that he started and somebody finished it for him. And then he goes and plays chess with this robot that has a super electronic brain. That's like one of his things that he does for his like spare time. He plays chess with this robot. And then he's got some experimental glasses that he tries out to see if it'll help his X-ray vision see through lead. But when he has them on, he notices that there's some lettering written on the lead sheet that he can only see with his X-ray vision. I told you I couldn't be kept out. You like puzzles. Can you guess who I am? I know who you are, and I'll reveal my knowledge in 24 hours. So now he's pretty concerned, and he leaves again, and he rescues a giant ship from we check in with him. He's carrying this ship with one hand, taking it back to port. But he's so distracted by this whole thing going on at the fortress that the people on board are complaining that he's shaking the boat and it's he's making the voyage more dangerous than the one that they rescued him from. So he goes back final time to the fortress, and again he just goes flying right through the solid rock, breaking another hole into the 50 feet of rock and sealing it back up after himself. And he goes into the Clark Kent room, and the statue of Clark Kent has a sign hanging around it that says, Kent is Superman. I told you I knew. Now I have proved it. Tonight is your last chance to act. He goes into the Batman room, and below the Batman statue, there's a blob of melted wax on the floor colored gray and blue. And this is evidence to him. He thinks, this must be the explanation. It's my turn to act, but first I got to check my theory and look at the giant key I used to get in. Well, there's a character in the shadows that thinks that Superman still has a guest. And the walls of the fortress start to shake, and the shadowy figure thinks it's an earthquake. I'll never be able to get out of here alive. I'm sealed in by tons of rock, and Superman can't help me either. The quake dislodged that chunk of kryptonite he was working on. It turns out that the person who is up to all this is Batman. And so Batman comes running out of the shadows and says, don't worry, Superman, I'll save you. And he picks up the kryptonite to save him. But Batman thinks, But now we're sealed in by tons of rock. And we're stuck in this small little area, and you can't get away from the kryptonite, so you won't be able to dig us out. And Superman says, I'm sorry that you were the intruder, because now you must share my doom. But let us face our fate bravely as our last minutes draw to an end. Tell me, how did you get in and why? Batman explains everything. He says, "Well, remember years ago when you told me that, or I told you that I was Bruce Wayne and took you into the Batcave and you told me you were Clark Kent?" He said, "Yeah, and I told you about my fortress, but I never suspected you because I trust you." So it shows that Batman, the way he got in initially is that he opened with a torch. He used an acetylene torch to open up the head of the key, and he was actually hiding inside the key when Superman used it to open the lock. So there's like a little drawing of him hiding inside the front of the key. And then he was hiding behind the penny, the Joker penny, because it was made of lead, and he knew that Superman couldn't see him back there. And then the glob of wax that he found on the floor by the Batman statue was because it was actually Batman standing there, and he had melted the wax statue of Batman and was standing in its place. And at this point, Superman starts laughing, and Batman's like, "Why the heck are you laughing? We're doomed in here." And Superman reveals that he figured it out because of the wax puddle on the floor, and that he decided to play a trick on Batman back, that the kryptonite in the room with them is fake, and that he actually has his powers and he can get them out. So he was just scaring Batman to get him back. And so the end of it is that he's Bat or Superman says, "Well, why the heck did you do this? Why did you play this trick on me?" And Batman says, "You might not recall it, but today is the arrival or the anniversary of your arrival on Earth from the planet Krypton. I wondered for a long time what to get you as a gift. What can one get Superman?" And he finally decided that his gift would be a puzzle that Superman would find difficult to solve. And so Superman puts his arm around Batman's shoulders and said, "Thanks, pal. You gave me a gift that I'll remember for the rest of my life." And Batman says, "And you gave me a scare I'll remember forever. Now I want you to join me in the Batcave." And later that evening, there's this humongous cake. It's like bigger than both of them put together, and it has all these the candles on it look really weird. The candles are Superman and Clark Kent candles, so they're candles, but then they have either a Superman or a Clark Kent face on them,
What the hell?
and they're burning. And they're all lit, and says, "Happy anniversary, Superman." And Superman's holding this gigantic knife. Like the hilt of the knife is as big as he is. And Batman says, "I baked it myself. I hope you don't need super strength to cut it." And Superman says, "Don't worry, I can eat solid steel." The end.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's pretty wacky, but I don't know. I'm these stories,
You're digging them.
yeah,
You get a good chuckle.
they entertain, yeah, they entertain the hell out of me. I like the art too, though. I like these, I don't know, the DC house style, the Superman artists, Wayne Boring, Kurt Swan, Al Plestino. I like these very clean art, but I like it.
I respect that art time, but I'm not sure it's my favorite.
I don't know if it's my favorite, but I do enjoy looking at it, like the black and white reprints. I like the look of them.
I've never seen it in black and white because I've always been like, if I'm going to get the Showcase or Essentials, it's going to be something that is not colorful. Like
Yeah.
a horror book or a war book, you know what I mean? They're
Yeah.
earth tones or
I mean, if I could inexpensively read these stories in color, I would, but
Yeah, they're You'd have to go the Masterworks, and they're pretty expensive.
Yeah, I'd rather just, pick these up
That
and
one, I don't even know if it's in a Masterworks. It's so late.
Well, they have the Golden Age Superman archives, and then they have the Superman Man of Tomorrow archives, which are the Silver Age. So it probably
Yeah.
is, yeah.
I'm waiting
But
for them to start doing something else now because they've kind of suspended, like, the Chronicles, and I was digging
yeah.
those,
I know.
And it,
DC irritates me that way.
yeah, it's like they don't follow through.
No. And I'm wondering if they're just going to do the omnibuses now, because they put out the Golden Age Superman omnibus, and now they got solicited the Batman omnibus, but it's like it repeats material that they already reprinted in the Chronicles and the archives.
I
But
didn't know
I don't
about the
know.
Superman one. Son of a bitch, I missed
Yeah,
it.
it's already out. You can get it on in-stock trade still for like 45% off.
I think I'm gonna order it tonight. What the hell?
I got
I
it
think
at
I
Costco
ordered
at
the
least.
Omnibus, but I think I ordered the Batman one.
Yeah, I mean that's
I
in
have the
this.
I have the Flash one for sure.
Yeah.
Are
Yeah,
they the
that's right. They did the Flash
hardcovers?
one. Hardcover omnibuses. Yeah,
Oh,
it's just
okay.
it's like the equivalent of the Batman one. It almost the one that's list the Batman one's in this previews right now. That's the orders are ending, but you can still add. And they're definitely, I think, kind of accompany each other because you know how like the Batman one has a new art on the cover. The
Golden
Superman
Age
one,
Omnibus.
yeah, Golden Age Superman Omnibus. I think it's a what's his face? The writer of Bat Cameron Stewart cover, I think. Something like that.
There's only seven left in stock. I better order. I better go on this sucker. Well, I have to make an Amazon order anyway because I am so
Probably.
I'm in so I'm so in love with the Three Musketeers or the Musketeers from BBC right now. I have to double dip and buy the even though I have it on DVR, I want it on DVD. It's just obsession. I have the original movies and the TV show is so good. I have to make. You know what's really gone through the roof and I never ordered it? The Superman Death and Return of Superman omnibus. That's like $158 fucking dollars right now. So,
Interesting.
son of a bitch. It gets me depressed because I could have jumped on that fucker.
Well, you have the issues, I'm sure.
Yeah, I do have the issues, but there some of these omnibuses, I just know they're gonna do something, and
Yeah.
I did I order the Batman one? You said it's on the DCBS right now, huh?
Yeah. The order cutoff passed, but you can still add to your order.
No, I think the order, well, it might have passed like just within the last couple of days.
Yeah, like 4 days ago. Like they do it now where you can't delete from the order.
But you can add.
But you can still add, and they basically let you add until they put up the new one. You can
Order history.
always add to it. But if you add anything, then you're definitely getting it because you can't take it back off again. Unlike during the month where you can add and
Add,
subtract stuff.
subtract, yeah.
But
I never paid attention to that. Oh no, this was a Batman Omni. Damn it. Ah!
what?
So I didn't order it.
You could still add it.
Batman.
I gotta cost you money every episode of this podcast.
Son
That's
of a
the
bitch.
goal.
Man, if you. I don't even want to say what on the air what my total is on this DCBS order. Oh my God. I
I
gotta
was wa
edit
yeah, I
it.
was watching your weekly shipment
Holy
on
shit.
Periscope. When you were done, I went over to Carol. I said, "Mike's stack of comics for just the week was this big."
She's like, man, how does his wife put up with this shit?
She was just shaking her head. She's like, "That's crazy." She already knows that you get a lot,
I
but
didn't order the omnibus. You and Bill are fucking evil, I swear to God. How come I didn't order this? Oh, no, it says on order, thank goodness. I did
I was going to say,
order it.
because it's not, Barb can't blame me for Batman. She can blame me for Superman, but Batman, I remember you posted, when previews came out, you posted a picture of that omnibus and said, oh, this is definitely, oh no, yeah, you said, this is definitely a buy for me. So.
I am going to jump, man, there's two things I got to order today. One of them, I found a site where it's affordable and it's a hot book right now. And the other one, I got to order this book. I got to order this book. But
yeah, the Superman, it looks like a really nice volume. I've thought about it.
They're expensive, but they're so fucking nice.
Yeah, well, and on InStock,
I have like a problem, man. If we had somebody like sit down with me like a psychiatrist to break down what was going on in my brain. Because I don't know. I can't read all this shit. But it's like a compulsive. I don't know. It's so bad. Thank God it's not into the toys, too. It used to be.
Yeah.
I did buy a Rocketeer this weekend, though. I saw a Rocketeer at Target. That's a must-have.
Ah, nice.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
it seems like you just pick up a toy once in a while.
Yeah.
But, that's one of the things I try to do is try to keep in mind how much I have a time to read. I'm also really good about not double dipping.
Yeah.
Every once in a while I might, but it's very rare for me to double dip. If I have it in one format, I usually stick
that's
to
enough.
That.
Well, that makes logical sense to me. I just don't abide by that rule.
But yeah, I don't have any of the Superman Chronicles, so I don't know this.
I skipped. I regrettably, I don't know why, as I skipped on the Batman Chronicles and I skipped on the Superman Chronicles, but I have the Flash, the Green Lantern, and Wonder Woman Chronicles. So
yeah.
I don't know. And then the Justice League Chronicles were supposed to come out, but they never did.
Yeah, and I think that's where they made the switch, because they ended up coming out with the Justice League Omnibus instead.
Yeah, I think the one guy retired, and then it's like they're doing something differently. Bob, what was his name? Bob Wayne? Bob Wayne retired. And he used to be in charge of how collected editions were coming out. And now it seems like they're maybe opening the gate to something new, but I don't know what that something new is. I know they hit 75 years on a lot of the characters, so
yeah,
we're getting a lot of the different volumes like Flash and Superman and Batman, and I'm sure there'll be a Green Lantern omnibus. But the Golden Age things are, to me, more important to get like in that form, because I will never purchase those. I'll tell you that right now. I do have like Batman number 4, 5, and 10 or whatever, but I just lucked out coming across those. Those are that's not going to happen again, you know?
Yeah.
So to have them in print would be awesome. Digitally, I'm sure they're available. Like, you can go download it. But who knows?
Some
of them. If they had like a DC Unlimited, that would be sweet. The reason I would subscribe to a DC Unlimited is because if I had my iPad and I had access to that, it would be like good for reference. You just pull it up whenever you needed it for a reference. But
right.
I would subscribe even though I want to own the print.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I wonder what they have digitalized when it comes to Golden Age stuff, because it looks like a lot of the stuff that they put out in archives, they don't have in Comixology yet. But that's one area where I wish DC was more like Marvel is, because Marvel seems to be ahead of them in that game. And I don't know, Marvel seems to be more reliable in terms of if they start a line of collections, they will continue to pursue it. I mean, and maybe it's just a difference of sales. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Maybe Marvel has better sales than that, but they're still putting out masterwork, new Masterworks volumes, and DC
Yeah,
hasn't.
there's one that I'm ordering in this next previews. I
Yeah.
don't remember which one it is, but I'm trying to get all the Defenders Masterworks, but I think that's my only Marvel one that
I
I'm
think they're
working on.
doing
Oh,
a
it's the Champions.
Champions. I was just gonna
Oh,
say,
and you know that I love Hercules, so I love that group. I love all the groups that never seem like they should be groups at Marvel. Like the Defenders, they're so fucking. They're not a good team. And the Champions, you could say the same thing. They're a team formed out of convenience, but
I find that appealing too.
the Champions have a special, well, Defenders have a special place in my heart because of the they got me into Marvel pretty much. But the Champions have a special place in my heart because when I first discovered a comic store and I discovered back issues, it was the first back issue series that I ever collected from beginning to end. So I kind of cherish that series, and I want to have that on my shelf. But I got this Norm Breyfogle Batman. Oh my
Oh,
God.
right.
It is so good.
That's cool.
I'm looking at it right now and I'm like, God, I want to do this for the next episode. At least
Yeah, I saw
cover
Chris
some of.
Campbell got that too this week.
Yeah, Chris Scott, he has a really good hardcover and softcover collection.
Yeah, I think I've seen a couple pictures of his shelves that people have taken when he's had those
Yeah.
events there and stuff.
I think
I've
what I'll
definitely
do is
gotten more into
I'll say,
trades.
yeah, I'll tell Barb, this is what I want for my birthday gift. I want the Superman omnibus. And then he had another trade in his unveiling there that I didn't know. Or look to, but it was like the Jason Todd trade paperback or the Robin one. And that one looks like it would be an awesome one to have on the shelf. But let me get to my final book. This was the one I think I enjoyed the most, and it's 90s stuff again, but it is so packed with action that I absolutely am loving this, but it's by Brandon Choi, Jim Lee, with pencils by Scott Clark and Trevor Scott. And it is Stormwatch number 2. I covered Stormwatch number 1 in the last one, and this is volume 1. Okay, so this isn't like the popular well one, the one that critics acclaim, like the Warren Ellis Stormwatch. This is before that. But at the gravesite of that one guy that died last episode, they activated Battalion's brother to give him powers, and that was Synergy that activated him, and now he's going ballistic with power, and the Mercs are like the evil organization, and Death Trap and a bunch of other guys, and they are getting killed at this cemetery, Fuji, Synergy, and Battalion. And then Battalion's brother, Malcolm, just went into superhuman mode, and you don't know what that is. And the weatherman's monitoring, and he's going to send down Stormwatch 2 because Battalion's getting ready to retire. He's had enough of this shit. And this new guy, Cannon, is going to take his place, and he's saying, well, who should I route over there? Well, maybe I should route over a couple of the guys that are on his team, but they're D.Va and Hellstrike are on diplomatic protection duty at the UN, and they can be dispatched in 5 minutes, but he needs somebody there to beam down immediately because they're getting their ass kicked, and he chooses Cannon and his group. And then one of the operators on Stormwatch says, sir, that thing that the anomaly at Chernobyl has gone, the reactor's gone critical and it's on level one alert. They're requesting our immediate intervention. So he's like, oh, fuck. Who am I going to send? I have to send Cannon and his group down to Chernobyl. So he sends Cannon and his group down to Chernobyl where that reactor is going ballistic, and then some evil dark figure comes out of the reactor, like some superhuman, and they're headed down there. Meanwhile, at the cemetery, Synergy just got Kilgore's claws. Kilgore looks like Wolverine, like a total. I can't believe how many like Wolverine knockouts Image has right now. It's like Wolverine was hot, and they every incarnation has to have a Wolverine, and this Kilgore is on the mercs, and he pulls out his claws and scratches Synergy on the back, and I guess it's got a venom inside of his claws, so she kind of loses, even though she's able to still take out Kilgore, he infected her with some venom. With her power, she was able to deactivate him, which was demutate him for like 10 minutes, so he lost his powers. And then Battalion's fighting off Slayer, who has this huge gun, like a 90s gun, and he's just blasting him. And Fuji's fighting with, God, I can't remember that guy's name's Brutus. And they're going head to head. And then D.Va and Deathstrike actually show up to help just in time. And the Mercs have to phase out of that. And then back in Chernobyl, Cannon and his group got slaughtered. And he's a weird leader. Like, Battalion will stay with his group. Cannon left his entire group behind. They're getting their ass kicked and beam back up to the satellite. And he gets chewed out by Battalion for leaving his group behind. And then Cannon mentions something that happened in Battalion's past. And his brother's in the hospital on Stormwatch headquarters and is trying to heal, and he's been activated, but we don't know what his power base is. And they're going to beam the team down. I guess Battalion was supposed to retire, but they got him to rejoin Stormwatch, and they're beaming him down to go fight with whatever's in Chernobyl. So that should be pretty cool. The artwork's pretty cool. I really dig it. Even though they're all like, every panel seems like it's a splash page. It's kind of fun. But this series is pretty good. I've never read Stormwatch outside of the DC version, you know? So this is
Yeah.
Cyberforce and Stormwatch are kind of new to me. And I'm digging them. Like, I was in the mood. You got to be in the mood for what you're going to read, or you're not going to enjoy it. Like, for example, I try to read Constantine the Hellblazer number 2 at 2 a.m. when, you know, when I can't sleep at night. And man, my brain just didn't want to register that because it's got a lot going on. And this time what I did is I read a few pages and he said, no, this isn't the time for this. And I read something else that was light. And then I came back in the morning and read Constantine the Hellblazer, and I was like, this is fucking awesome. You know, and I went into it the first time like I wasn't feeling it, but when I was awake and fully, I was like, man, how did I like think of I was not liking this? This is great. But yeah, I think it's very important to feel what you're reading. And I really felt like reading 90s books, and you obviously felt like reading golden slash silver age books. Actually, you read a Bronze Age Wonder Woman, so.
Yeah.
But you've been in that mode. And the golden age stuff, they're dense. I mean,
Yeah.
even though the story you might have covered is 12 pages. It's going to take you longer to read those 12 pages than it would today to read 22 pages.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
They're about the same time at the least. But yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. Sometimes I'm in a really specific mood, or sometimes I'll switch around, I'll read a little bit older stuff and then I'll read some newer stuff. Sometimes I can switch back and forth like that, and then sometimes I'm really just specifically, one or the other. I'm not in the mood for one or the other, and
I think you're gonna love Constantine Hellblazer number 2.
oh man,
I know you love the first one, so
yeah.
I said, you know, when I was awake and I read it, I said, Chris is gonna really enjoy this one.
Nice. Yeah, if that keeps up with the same quality, I could see it becoming like my favorite current monthly. I thought number one was number one was an easy 5 out of 5 for sure. I was really impressed with it right from the first page. You open it up and John's Constantine's buck naked, covered in blood. I was just like, oh, this is gonna be interesting.
And then he has sex with the demon.
Yeah, but
That's pretty good stuff.
cool.
Plus, the art is really great.
Yeah. I mean, for a 5 out of 5, like, I need to love both the story and the art, you know. If I'm not crazy about one or the other, that's gonna knock it down, you know, in my estimation. So, I liked both. I thought both the story and the art was nice and interesting storytelling choices and stuff. But anyhow,
Well,
so what do we?
we had a few questions. One was from
Okay.
Kyle Pettit, and he said, "Have we ever read Concrete? I think it's by Chadwick." Or
Yeah, it's like a dark horse, right? I
yeah,
haven't. Yeah, I've been aware of it for a long time.
Paul
I've never read
Chadwick.
any.
I haven't either, believe it or not. I'm pretty weak in the dark horse area, except for the last, I don't know, 5 years, maybe 10 years,
Yeah.
but everything that like they originally launched with and stuff like Concrete and stuff, I haven't read. I think that I might run across some of that in Dark Horse Presents, but I haven't yet.
Yeah, there's all that classic Dark Horse, early Dark Horse stuff. And I'm aware of a lot of it, but I haven't read much of it.
And then our other question is on the similar in similar vein. Did we ever read Volume 1 of Spider-Woman? It was from Donnie Salvo of Sunday Comics podcast.
Again, no, I have not. You know that first issue where they have the photo cover? That's what's her name? The writer that was writing Catwoman for a while and then wrote Clarion the Witch Boy.
Oh, Ann Nocente.
Yeah, that's her in that costume.
I actually like people like didn't like her renditions, but I did, especially Clarion. I thought it was great. I haven't finished reading it yet, but I read the first four and I thought it was amazing. So I have read Jessica Drew's Spider-Woman, but not all of it. I own all of it. I bought the full run of it, just like I bought Miss Marvel's full run and everything else. Dazzler full run. All the women titles. She-Hulk, I think I have a full run. The She-Hulk one by John Byrne, I do not have a full run, but at some point I'd like to get it. But I've always liked her, and I'm currently reading Spider-Woman in the monthlies, and I dig, that's my favorite like Spider-Woman comic. Like by far, I like it way more than Spider-Gwen and way more than Silk. That's my top Spider-Woman comic.
Yeah, it's interesting that there's multiple of them now.
Yeah, and there's going to be after the, well, I don't know if Silk's being relaunched. I can't remember.
Don't either.
I know that Spider-Gwen's being relaunched and Spider-Woman's being relaunched. She looks pregnant in the relaunch, which is weird. I don't know what's going to happen there, but
Yeah.
I always thought her costume was great, and my introduction to that Spider-Woman was the Saturday morning cartoon, Jessica Drew's Spider-Woman. It was kind of
Oh,
cool that
nice.
they did launch a character like that.
Yeah.
I have a few of those
Cool.
VCR tapes with the series on it. But our last thing to talk about is Buck Rogers, the penultimate episode.
Yes. Buck Rogers. I gotta bring up my notes.
You know what the title was? I'm not near my computer.
I'll get it for you.
Okay.
Was called the penultimate episode. It was a good one. You told me yesterday that you liked it, and I liked it as well.
I got engrossed in it because I don't know if you fall into the same, but a lot with the second season is like I'll kind of watch them through my corner of my eye while I'm doing something else.
Yeah.
And this one I got engrossed in because I don't know it. Some of the scenes just looked really cool, and I like the concept of it. It read like a courtroom drama that has like a twist, and I kind of liked it.
Yeah. So it's called The Testimony of a Traitor. 12th episode of season 2, originally aired April 9th of 1981, 2 days after my birthday.
It's a really good opening scene as they get boarded by is he a colonel? I can't remember if he's a colonel or a general. But he's usually like an internal affairs type of guy that,
Commissioner, I think, or
yeah,
something.
he's like a real head honcho on Earth. So they're the searchers near Earth, and they get boarded by, and they're like, why is this guy boarding us? Because he usually does like court martials and stuff like that. You know, he's involved in that. And they're like, why would he be
Yeah.
coming aboard our ship? And he basically places Buck immediately under the arrest for the destruction of the Earth. In other words, I forget what they call that, the dark time where the nuclear bombs went off and
Yeah, the nuclear
the
holocaust.
nuclear holocaust. They accuse him of that, and like Buck is like, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't remember any of this. So the whole synopsis of it is trying to uncover what happened, and it's a really good episode.
Yeah, they found what started it all was that they found a videotape, like an old VCR tape.
The
And
fact
this
that
is
they found a
accurate.
player to play it is pretty
Yeah,
cool.
that's probably the surprising thing about the episode, but
It looked like a little drawer, like a yellow drawer. It was weird looking when they put the tape in. I'm like, what? That
yeah.
doesn't even look like a VCR playback machine.
Maybe they had to reverse engineer it. The tape was made in the 80s, so they found it. So that would be a VCR tape. And they found it in the Colorado Rockies.
Yes,
I
they did.
made note of, so I don't know if made me curious if you had something to do with this, but
I had nothing to do with it. At least I don't remember. You'd have to hook me up to that machine.
after we clear Buck, we'll have to hook you up and see if maybe you're responsible.
Oh,
But on the tape is this Major Jim Peterson, who's Buck recognizes as like one of his best friends, and he's in this like room that looks like it's been bombed out and destroyed, and he's in pretty bad shape himself. But the point that he made this video is that his who he thought was his best friend, Buck Rogers, he believes him to be responsible for the nuclear holocaust. And that he has a little video on his desk. He has a little video screen, and it zooms in on that. And he shows this video of Buck meeting with a bunch of high-ranking Air Force officials, and he agrees to help them with to go behind the president and the government's act to make a preemptive nuclear strike on the enemy. And unless I missed something, I think they kind of kept the given when it was airing. I'm sure they meant the USSR, but I don't think they were specific in naming them. I think they probably figured the audience would just assume that in
Yeah,
1981.
Cold War times.
Yeah, Cold War times. So basically what they need to do, and they need Buck to do, and what he agrees to do is go and break in to this facility where they have the codes for all of the nuclear warheads.
What is the name of that machine? Did you write that down? It's like the OPM or the O.
I just wrote down a memory machine.
Okay.
Yeah,
I
'cause
forget what it was called, but it's kind of like, it's pretty cool technology because it's almost like a modern, like a futuristic lie detector test. It's
yeah.
like to uncover the truth, you could hook them up, and they hook them up to this machine, and that's where he essentially incriminates himself even worse.
Yeah.
Because he looks like he's trading, and Wilma and Hawk just like look at each other like, holy fuck, he's a traitor.
Yeah, cause she goes to see him in between, and he's feeling pretty shitty, and he says, he tells her, "I don't remember any of this." I mean, they just watched him on screen, and it was clearly him, and he doesn't have any of these memories. So it's Dr. Goodfellow that administers this machine that he's got, and just kind of a cute moment with Twiggy. Twiggy shows up, and he has a petition of support that everybody and the crew of the searcher signed to say that they stand by Buck. So
Yeah.
that was kind of cool. But he also gets the first flash, and this will come up later, but he gets the first flash of Mount Rushmore. He just gets that's the first image they get out of the machine, and they don't know what it has to do with anything. But then the next two memories, like you said, are pretty much incriminating. They show him meeting with the colonel, a colonel that's a part of the conspiracy that gives him this like mini spy camera and some other stuff. And then the second memory is equally incriminating because it shows Buck breaking into the facility and he's causing all these explosions. And so the base goes on alert, and then he evacuates the code room forcibly in the name of airport security. And then we see him using that spy camera to take pictures of the codes. So it looks pretty bad, and they go on recess again, and Buck finds out that.
That's funny though, instead of like leaving the machine on to find out what's going on, the guy says it's time for lunch.
Yeah.
Let's break for lunch. It's adjourned.
But yeah, they've pretty much. He finds out that they are going to announce the verdict without any further discussion, that they're convinced of his guilt, and he's done basically. So, but at that moment, he gets that flash of Mount Rushmore again, and it's such a strong memory that it's painful. It has to sit down. So Wilma and Hawk are there with them, and the three of them hatch a plan to get Buck to Mount Rushmore to see if he goes there physically, it'll jog his memories. And Hawk helps them by kind of running distraction and interference as the two of them fly without permission to Earth. And they're pretty close to Earth. At the beginning of the story, they've just left Earth. And they have to turn around, so they fly to Mount Rushmore. And
The effects seem better too, like than usual, like where you have that like computerized space shuttle moving. The ships looked better, and you actually see Hawk's ship again with the talons, because
yeah, I thought.
they almost get shot out of the sky because
Right.
they escape and they're alerted to their escape, and then Hawk actually lets them land safely near Mount Rushmore, where they uncover like what the next step was. And they really don't uncover a lot there other than more flashbacks, you know what I mean? More what do they call it when he like zones out and thinks of the past.
Right. Yeah, flashbacks. I mean, yeah, I
But
agree with the.
they're just like images, right? I mean, he doesn't even come to any kind of conclusion by visiting there other than he knew that he was there in the past.
Yeah, it's not even quite sure of that either. I do agree. I thought that the special effects were better. I thought maybe I remember while watching the episode thinking, I wonder if they saved a lot of their budget for this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, what specifically when they get to Mount Rushmore, the park, there's a guy there that's kind of the attendant, and he tells them, "Are you here to see the bunker?" And they don't know what he's talking about. He says, "Yeah, you know, the president's bunker, the one that was built in 1986 to protect the president in case there was a nuclear war." And so they say, "Yeah, let's see it." And so when they go in there, that's, as you said, Buck has a flash of there, you know, it's outfitted for the president, and there's a desk, and looks like a, you know, they set it up similar to the Oval Office and stuff. And yeah, he has a flash of, just like the flashes of Mount Rushmore that he was getting, he has a flash of a man seated at that desk. But they're caught up with at this point, so he has to go back to the searcher, and they ask the guy that's proceeding over the trial if he could go on the machine one more time, and given that he is accused of a crime that will result in a sentence of death, and the due to the seriousness of that, they permit it. But the first memory comes up. It doesn't seem like it's going to help much, because it's basically Buck meeting with the leader of the conspiracy. And I said, "This is, you know, all right, this is enough. Like, we've given him enough chances." He said, "Well, hold on, hold on. Just go a little further back." And so finally, we have a memory that saves him, where, and we see why he remembered this bunker, because he was actually there before. And we see him meeting with the President of the United States. And it turns out the President recruited him. He told him, the President found out about this conspiracy and said, "We need you to go from the inside, and we're going to have to put you into deep hypnosis." And that's why he didn't have any memories of all this, because he said, they said, "You know, we need you to do, it's going to remove your memory. You're not going to remember that you agreed to help out this way. You're going to be convincing and a convincing part of the conspiracy." And so that's that kind of, he's off.
Yeah, it's court adjourned. He's off. The guy that was accusing him wants to shake his hand, and they shake hands, and he gets off. The there's some interesting things though about this. Is he gets off for this, but you still don't know if his action caused the nuclear war. It could have. We don't know. All we know is that he was an undercover agent taking pictures. That's the latest thing we know. We don't know what resulted in it or if they caught those guys. Right? Because
That's true. Yeah, I mean,
they
it's like
went
a
backward in time.
right.
We
Yeah, I
know that
guess.
he's not guilty of it because he was a sleeper agent, but we don't know if those events caused the nuclear holocaust.
Yeah, they don't have enough time in the
Yeah, they don't
episode,
have
yeah.
enough time in the episode to figure that out.
Right.
And then the other interesting thing is, and that really bothered Buck early on, is that he says, "Man, Wilma, this really hurts that my best friend thinks that I betrayed the United States."
Yeah.
And that he'll always think that, because his best friend
Right.
died thinking that he's betrayed the United States. So I thought
Yeah.
that part was interesting too.
Right.
But it was really well done. The other thing that was strange is Mount Ru I thought when they were going to go to Mount Rushmore, it would be more like devastated. And what you see in Mount Rushmore is a very clean national park with the park ranger saying, "Come on in."
Yeah.
They did mention that it was one of the
Right.
things that was retained that didn't get destroyed though.
Yeah, they did put a little line in there saying this and a couple other monuments they mentioned were the only ones that survived intact, so they didn't have
Like
to
Egypt or something, and I can't
yeah.
remember.
Cheaper than yeah, the pyramids of Egypt was one of them, he said. So yeah, putting that line in the script, I'm sure, was a lot cheaper than spending the money to make Mount Rushmore look
Yeah.
but
And
one
when
other
the,
thing
well, go ahead.
that I made a note of was when he's proven innocent, Everyone's excited, obviously, and Wilma comes up to him and gives him
A tongue kiss.
a quite. I don't know. Well, I don't know if there was tongue, but
I think there was tongue motion
it
in
was
there.
mouth to mouth, though. I mean, it was
Yeah,
definitely
there
like,
wasn't a peck on the cheek or
no, it
anything.
was, and it was a pretty long kiss. And I was like, whoa, because, I mean, they've only slightly hinted at romance between the two of them, and she really lays one on him.
Mac Daddy. Woo!
Yeah.
I was exactly what I was gonna mention. Because that stood out to me, because it was a big deal.
I guess I bet it did stand out
Yeah.
too.
It's like, why is he kissing my woman?
Yeah. Like, Buck, you survived the trial, but now you must face my wrath.
Yeah.
The rage of Red Mikey.
It was a really good episode. It might be like my second or third favorite from this bunch. Maybe even the first, because I was like
Yeah.
on the edge of my seat, like, what? How is he gonna get out of this?
Well, what's interesting about it too is that it pertains really closely to the whole Buck Rogers story, you know?
Yes,
I mean, and
yes.
it ties in, like, I would almost say, like, if someone watched the first season and they didn't really want to watch the second season, still to watch this episode because it ties into his past, you know, and the
Right,
past and the
it
history
does.
in the history of Earth. You know, like they should have done a lot more of this, you know, like they should have done like a part two, and they should have done more of this type of thing, I think, tying it into the whole Buck Rogers story. It didn't seem as weird, you know, that you had these new characters and
Yeah,
stuff.
I think it's the first episode too that Goodfellow didn't bother me. Like, he seemed legit in this episode. There's usually some mannerism that he has that kind of bugs me, and this one he didn't bug me at all. But yeah, it was a good episode. So we only have one left, and I did verify on my CD copies or that I have that it's on the other side. It's just weird because they're unlabeled DVDs, even though it's a legit copy, but it's got like side A and side B. They're dual side DVDs, and side B is not printed. So I thought, well, there's no side B, and all the other discs, they have a side A and side B printed on the inner circle, so you know which one to face up, you know. And this one did not. So I was like, I wonder if I'm missing that episode. But I have it, so that's cool. But this one was really good. Like, I expected to watch it from the corner of my eye, and I like actually watched it before I took a shower in the morning, because I knew Barb probably didn't want to watch it, you know. And I was like, while she's in the shower, I'm gonna watch this. And I when I went up, I was like, Barb, you know, I actually really enjoyed that episode.
She missed the best one of the season.
Yeah. But I was wondering if you had thought about what we're going to do afterwards, 'cause if it's going to be something we have to get or see if it's on Amazon or, you know, Netflix or whatever, should we start thinking about it? At least bridge it with like a movie like you suggested, Taxi Driver, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that might be a good idea. We could each pick a movie, because we, you know, how we did Taxi Driver and Logan's Run.
Yeah. I'll pick a movie, 'cause well, do you have Amazon Prime?
No,
Okay, then
I have Netflix
I don't want to pick a movie then.
though.
Well, I don't want to pick the movie I was going to pick, 'cause I know it's on Amazon Prime, but not Netflix.
Well, we can try to make a goal of picking them this week or something.
Yeah.
'Cause then we'll have 2 weeks to the next episode, and then 2 weeks after that. So if we pick them this week.
I know what movies that I'd like to do. I don't know if we'll have to how we'll get them, but the two that I want to revisit is Dragon Slayer from '82, and the other one that I would like to do is Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Dragon Slayer, you've been talking about that one a lot.
Yeah.
Is that the one that's on Amazon Prime, or is
That's the
it?
one on Amazon Prime, yeah.
I wonder if Netflix has it on a disc.
I did not check the disc. I did not check the discs. But it's also, I know somebody listened to us on the Valiant Central podcast where we talked about it, and Paul, who's one of the co-hosts, he actually acquired it like for $4.
Nice.
Maybe we could get him to send it to you because he didn't like
What
it.
the heck is my?
Was that a hawk?
There we go. I don't know what that was. Maybe you heard us talking about Buck Rogers season two.
Yeah.
It's coming in. All right, let's see here. Dragons. Is it all one word? Dragon Slayer?
Yeah, it's all one word.
Dragon Slayer. Did not have any matches.
Man, that bird's loud. He's
I think
pissed
I'm
off.
safe. I think I'm safe in here. I find myself in a Hitchcock movie in a second here.
Birds is happening. That'd be another good movie to revisit at some point.
Dusty, save me. Stop sleeping. Do your job. Protect me from the birds. No, it doesn't look like Dragon Slayer does not
I
have any
am gonna talk
matches.
to Paul and see what I could do. I'll pay for shipping. See if he'll
I
ship it
wonder if did he get it on Amazon?
you. No, I think what he got it, he went to Target or something and
Whoa.
found it. But I know he didn't like it, so I'm like, man, I wonder if I could get a hold of that. But we'll talk about it. So
Yeah,
maybe
I'll figure it out.
maybe if you want to join us, that'll be one of our choices at some point. And then have you thought about what your choice might be? Or do you need to
No,
think
but
about
I'll come up with something soon though.
it? Okay.
Even if we do Dragon Slayer first,
Okay.
if we can work it out, I'll look. Something called Curse of the Dragon Slayer, but that's not it. That's
I'm
from
surprised they don't even have
2013.
it there and it's like not available or something. That's weird.
Yeah, that's kind of strange. Usually it'll come up, like you said, it's not available. I think it's searching the DVDs too. Maybe not. Oh, here it is. Okay, it wasn't searching the DVD releases. They do have it on DVD, 1981.
Oh, okay.
Peter McNichol, Caitlin Clark,
It was
Peter
up
Iyer.
against Raiders of the Lost Ark for special effects in the Academy Awards. So, yeah.
When dragons were real. There's a 2011 Dragon Slayer too, but it's about a drug using skateboarder.
That's not the one.
That's the one for Keith to watch.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can wrap this one up. You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, at mythmakingetc. What am I talking about? Email is mythmakingetc@gmail.com or mike@comicbooknoise.com. Twitters or at Mike Myers Brunch and at, I was going to say at DBM00, but it's at MythMakingETC.
You're getting your men mixed up again.
and our Facebook page is Geek Brunch Podcast, where we post a lot of our episode threads there. And then you have your friend Kid to Flash. You've been pretty on target with that. You've been releasing a lot.
Yeah, lately I've been on top of it. I was on a bit of a recording tear in June. I recorded a whole bunch of episodes in a row.
That way, you
It's
can release them whenever.
yeah, and like scheduled them out. But I'm starting to catch up with what I have prepared. I got a couple ready, but.
Yeah, I want to do that so bad with my Valiant Verses. I want to like do like six that way I could get it like on a regular release schedule.
Yeah.
I just can't. I can't find all the time because things have come up, like other podcast appearances, and
Right.
Valiant podcast usually records during the work week, so I don't know. It makes it weird. And then I'm starting to exercise again, so I'm watching a lot of TV. So it, I don't know. I don't have a lot of time, but I'm gonna try to record one tonight. But yeah, Dragon Slayer will be one of our choices, at least tentatively. We'll see if Chris could get a copy. If you can't get it from Netflix, let me know, and I'll see if I can get Paul to route it to you.
Okay. Just pass it around.
Yeah, just pass it around and we'll take over the internets with Dragon Slayer.
And I'll send it to the next person that you get to try to like it. No, I don't know. I might like it. I like fantasy stuff, so.
Well, the thing that you have a good chance of liking it, and you think different than Paul, is I think when you watch something like, well, you obviously you watch Buck Rogers and you
Yeah.
watch Taxi Driver, you're able to detach yourself from current day
Right.
and see the movie for what it was at the time.
Yeah.
And that's what Paul can't do. So
Okay.
I think you're gonna enjoy it because you enjoyed Logan's Run. I mean,
Right.
and you enjoyed the Buck Rogers for the most part. So,
Yeah.
and you're into Star Trek right now. Like you're watching the hell out of those episodes, and it's so funny now. We like Barb's like feeding these birds like crazy time, and
Don't
what's
do
cra
it. It's
what what's
dangerous.
we have so many birds now. But the interesting thing is Harley doesn't go after them, and they're starting to learn that she doesn't care about them, so they don't care that she's like right next to them. It's so bizarre, like she doesn't
Interesting.
care. I mean, if the doves are the gra I forget if they're called grackles or whatever. I don't know what Barb calls them. They're the bigger birds that come, and those ones will fly away when Harley's around, but the little ones, the finches and stuff, they don't care. They'll just go right near her. They'll poop on her while she's laying down.
Aw.
I love Harley. She's just so she's such an unusual dog. She's got
Yeah.
like ADD like up the wazoo.
Yeah, hopefully I'm safe here from, I don't hear the, I think the bird might have left.
That was awesome. Whatever that was happening, that bird was agitated, I think.
Yeah.
That sounds like
That's
it was out there protecting its baby or something. Some predator was in the area or something.
It was
It's quite
providing some
nuts.
atmosphere. I definitely get some noisy birds around here. I think it's 'cause, well, I don't know why it is, but sometimes it gets caught in the background of when I'm recording the
Yeah.
solo shows, and I go back and listen, and I'm like, oh, the damn birds are in the background again.
Are you still on target for Baltimore? I hope you say yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Start booking that flight, my friend.
I have it. I
All
got
right.
everything is, but I'm gonna, originally I was gonna come, I was gonna stay like you guys stay,
Yeah.
like from the Fools Are Bang, but I'm gonna come down Friday morning and leave Sunday night.
Okay.
So I made it a little shorter just to save myself some money, but I'll be there pretty much all day Friday, Saturday, and most of Sunday.
2 full days, that's good.
Yeah. So, but so it's kind of a little bit of a compromise, but still be able to be there. So, should be a still good amount of time.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, looking forward to
All right. And you can see us at Baltimore for sure. The Geek Brunch Retrocast will be there. Only if Bomer was showing up. I know he's not. But Keith should be there. And
Nice.
Daryl should be there. Campbell, I don't. If he goes, it'll be like a one day thing, but
Yeah.
doesn't look likely. But should be a really fun time. Especially because I haven't ever seen you in person.
Yeah,
It's awesome.
exactly. That's what I was like. I definitely I definitely have to make it, even if I shortened my trip a little bit, because then, it's how long will it be till the next time,
Yeah.
So.
I hope Alan goes too. I think he's on target to go. So you get to meet Alan.
Yeah, I hope he does. That'd be awesome. Alrighty.
All right. Well, talk to you later. Barb just changed an air filter in her Hyundai and took out the glove compartment.
Holy cow. Yeah, I think that's usually where they
You
put
haven't
it,
done
is
it?
back.
Oh, this is the engine filter?
Yeah, I didn't air filter. I didn't do the cabin one yet.
Oh.
That one's next.
That one's done already, though?
This one's done.
Was that easier to get to? Okay. Well, the Elantra, you have to take out the glove compartment, which is unusual. At least I think it
That's
is.
the cabin air filter. It's for the inside of the car.
Oh, okay.
That's the air filter for the
Yeah, I think that's where mine is.
Oh.
This is the engine air
Oh, gotcha.
filter. I did that once.
No, the engine air filter's where it's supposed to be. She said it's the cabin air filter.
Cabin air filter, right? That's what I'm
Yeah.
talk that's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
I don't know if I have a cabin air filter on my Durango.
Probably not.
I'm sure you do, yeah. Or you'd probably be like coughing up the lung while you're in your car every time.
I don't have one. I honest
Sucking
to
in
God I
on.
haven't changed it. I swear I haven't.
Well, if you didn't, you could have one and just not have changed it. It's probably like full of dirt and.
We used to own a Saturn. They've obviously stopped making Saturns. But to change the battery, it was a son of a bitch.
Where was it underneath something?
No, it was just you had to unlock all kinds of weird stuff, and it took forever. You had to have like all these tools, and you'd think that certain things, like when you're designing a car, like certain things that you need to replace, are just going to
Yeah.
be that have the easiest access.
Right.
And with that one, it wasn't the case.
Yeah, that's. I definitely think that would be an important design goal, would be
Yeah.
to make stuff like that accessible. Yeah.
All right, so we had some retro car talk because
Retro car talk.
the Saturn is is deceased. They no longer make them.
Yeah, I don't think my first car was a Ford Tempo. They still make, I don't think they make Ford Tempos anymore. Ford obviously is around, but
Well,
I don't think they make
my
the Tempos
first car
anymore.
was a 73 Maverick, I think. And then I had a VW, but I don't remember the year. It might have been a 73 VW too, a bug.
I don't
And then
remember the year of my Tempo. It was a my grandfather gave it to me. And it only had a radio, so I listened to oldies station all the time. That's why I know the lyrics to tons of oldies songs.
The Maverick I had an attachment 8-track player, so
Nice.
you could see how old that thing was. My parents would play 8-tracks in there.
Yeah.
That was a hand-me-down, so I got that, and then the next one I got was a bug, which my dad bought for me. And then after that, I bought a car, which was probably the worst purchase ever, but it was awesome. But it was a 78 Fiat Spider convertible.
Whoa.
It was a awesome car, but it was horrible for I'd spend it cost me more money to fix it than I ever paid for it. Like to get
Yeah.
parts for it were like almost impossible. And there was like one guy in Colorado Springs. I actually brought that car with me because I bought it when I was in college. And brought it to Colorado, and it's the worst car you could have for weather. It was terrible. I ended up in the ditch like five times. I was
Oh
like,
my gosh.
I just peel out. You don't want rear-wheel drive cars here in the
That's a
winter
cool
time.
looking car though. I just Googled the im Google image searched.
It
That's a
was
cool looking
awesome.
car,
It was
yeah.
awesome. We would have these latch, take the convertible off, and it was just a two-seater, and it wasn't very practical, but I guess it had a good, 4 or 5 year life for me. And then I had one guy in the Springs that would work on it, and he started off doing a good job, and then his jobs just started sucking, and I'd have to take it back and back and back, and I was like, fuck it, I gotta get rid of this thing.
Yeah. That's a cool looking car, though.
Yeah, it was red. It was a nice.
Oh yeah, there's some pictures, some red ones on here.
It's one of those things that you buy in college because it's cool, but not because
yeah.
it's practical. Like your mind isn't thinking, oh, I have to have some part shipped from Italy. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not thinking that. It's saying, well, man, this is a cool looking car. I'd like to pop the top down and drive.
Yeah, exactly.
But when I did buy it, I had no idea I was going to Colorado. So.
So yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, that would be better for the New Mexico weather.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
I thought I was going to stay home. I really did. It's just that pay and jobs didn't work out that way.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I kind of left.
Kara and I were just saying yesterday how you never say never.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you never know what you're going to end up doing, because neither of us thought we were going to come back to Buffalo.
Right.
But if we hadn't, we never would have met, because we met here.
That's right. So. It's strange how things work out. It really is. Some of the things, if you look back on, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But, so you've had how many cars? You've had the Tempo?
Tempo, I had, after
what year,
that I had a...
What year was the Tempo?
I don't know. I think it was 80s something.
Okay.
I don't remember. Yeah.
That was your first car.
Yeah. And then I had another Ford after that, a Taurus. I had that for quite a while. I ended up having a lot of problems with it towards the end, though. That had a sunroof. That was cool.
Uh huh. Our Saturn did, but the sunroof eventually broke. We tried it when we buy like new cars. We try to buy them knowing that we're going to have it for more than 10 to 12 years.
Yeah.
You know? So we always strategically try to pick something that we're going to like a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I've never been a huge car person, so I've always had a economical approach to my vehicles, you know, looking for, I mean, most of my cars have been cars of opportunity, you know, like,
yeah.
Pass me down or like a cheap deal or something like uh-huh. that. Or, you know, like I said, my first car was from my grandfather. My second car, my dad found a really good deal, from our neighbor that owned a collision shop.
Yeah.
So he got it for me that way. And then, I had a Dodge Neon, which, again was my dad had leased it, and then he ended up buying it out. And then, the car that I bought new on my own was a Toyota Corolla. And like
uh-huh.
I said, again, it was just, very much about economics. I was just looking for gas mileage and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, like I was saying, that Fiat Spider was a cool looking car. Like if I do see cars that I like, it's not the modern sports cars, it's the older ones from back in the day. I like the design of the cars back in the day. I mean, so if I had, it definitely would not be the first thing I would spend money on, but if mm-hmm. I had just like more money than I knew what to do with, then I'd mm-hmm. probably get like a restored old school classic car or something like that. But I'd have to have a lot of money.
I'd get a muscle car. Like, I didn't tell you is the Maverick I had was a V8, man. That sucker had fucking power. It just couldn't brake. It had some wicked power. It was ugly too. It was like yellow. It was an ugly looking car.
But that's another thing I miss about cars now. You know, they're all just like the same, like there's just the same range of color, and they're all kind of the same.
Yeah.
I miss the way that cars used to have a more of a variety of colors and stuff back in the day too. But
the reason I picked the Fiat too is I had a mechanic friend, and he got to check it out. And when I was in Albuquerque, he would fix it. Do you know what I mean? And that's when I had no problem, because I trusted this guy. You know, he was a friend of my uncle's, and he would always explain what he's going to do, and I knew he wasn't going to shaft me, and everything everything fell into place, and even my dad was okay with it, because my dad's real practical. Like, he would tell me, Mike, why would you buy this car? You know, I don't think it's a good purchase, because it was my own money. I had to pay, like, $2,500 for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was good for when I had it, and it was cool. It was a stick shift, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think most of my first one was an automatic, and my next two were stick. So, it's good to know stick, you know.
Yeah, I wish I could. I all my cars are automatic, so by the time someone and my dad doesn't. You know, neither of my parents drive sticks, so by the time someone tried to show me how to do it, my college friend tried me show. He drove stick. He always had Saabs.
Yeah.
So he tried to show me, and I just got frustrated. I was so used at that point to not having to think about shifting gears.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so used to just kind of not having to think that much about it. My brother-in-law, he drives stick too. He loves it.
I think it's good to know in case, but my wife would say it's good to know how to drive a motorcycle too, but I don't want her to drive a motorcycle because Barb is not a defensive driver. She's like, she's like in the race all the time. Total offensive driver.
That's the complete opposite of my wife. She's very cautious.
Well, I'm cautious and I take my time. I'm not in a hurry. I mm-hmm. always make sure I have enough time to get where I'm going. And if I'm late, I'm late.
Yeah. I guess I'm kind of in between. I'm not aggressive, but I'm not as careful as my wife is either. I'm kind of in between. But I'm pretty good, I think. I don't know. But it would be nice. I mean, if there's an apocalypse or something, and the only car I find is that has stick. Gas in it is a stick shift. I mean, I have the general idea of how you do it.
Yeah.
But whoever's with me is probably gonna get a bumpy ride.
Well, actually, I think if you know you press the clutch when you're shifting, you're fine. It's just mm-hmm. if you're not pressing it right, you'll kill the engine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Once you learn it, once you do it, like, even if you were to drive around the block and just go up to third gear, you, like, know what to do.
Yeah.
The first time you do it, though, I guarantee you would go boom, and you'd probably start the car.
Yeah.
Install it.
That's when I tried to learn, that's what I did. And
yeah.
I don't know. I guess I just got frustrated, gave up with it, but... Like my brother-in-law said, he doesn't. Because I said, well, I like that I don't have to think about it. And he said, well, I don't think about it either. I mean, I'm at this point, he's so used to driving stick that it comes naturally to him too.
Yeah. Well, my mom always drives automatic because she never learned stick, and that's why my dad was like, they wanted me to get my license when I was 15. So he's like, okay, you're going to learn stick, and. The way he taught me stick is he says, I want you to drive up the mountain. And it was an awful experience to learn how to drive because my mom was in the back seat saying, Manuel, he's going to kill us. He's going to kill us. He's going to drive off the cliff. And you don't know how when you're learning how to drive stick and you have somebody screaming in the back seat. It's awful.
Oh my gosh.
The anxiety is incredible. But man, I could appreciate what my dad did because that's how I learned. Like, I learned the hard way.
This is a trial by fire, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm throwing you to the wolves.
If you're gonna learn, going up the side of a mountain. Yeah. If you drive off the cliff, you drive off the cliff.
Like, I'm not gonna waste my time having you drive around the block. You're learning quick and fast by having your life.
Yeah. And then I'm going to put your mom in the back seat so she's yelling, so it'll give you...
Yeah.
If you can do this, you can do anything.
So you're either going to learn how to drive or you're going to kill your parents.
Yeah.
That's what I needed. My friend needed to get my parents and put them in the back seat.
Yeah, that's what he needed to. So I could be screaming at you the whole time. All right. Jeez. Well, this has been an extended episode of auto talk and driving with the brunchers.
There you go. Driving with the brunchers. It's a new new feature coming soon.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Chris, and you have a good Sunday, my friend.
You too.
Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
It's so easy to fly through the window. It's so easy.